Hello and thanks for tuning in. Today I'm speaking to Lucy Robson, a quantum algorithm scientist at Universal Quantum. And Lucy, you have an interesting job title. What is a quantum algorithm scientist?
It does sound very impressive, doesn't it? So my role is really about trying to understand what we can use large-scale quantum computers for. So this is taking problems which are too challenging to solve on classical computers, mapping them to quantum algorithms, and then implementing them in an experimental way.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. I mean, what attracted you to quantum computing?
So I actually began my journey in quantum computing all the way back in 2017, 2018. And so this was when we were on the cusp of various quantum computing vendors offering up APIs and free access to some of their smaller quantum computers in the cloud. So my first career, although it seems strange to talk about having a first career and then a second career, but I actually kind of began my journey in cybersecurity. So I'm a computer scientist rather than a physicist by training. And I've been at university doing computer science, had got some experience working in cybersecurity and network security. But the way I originally got into that is I was actually just a self-taught programmer. So, you know, going through RFCs, understanding how internet protocols worked, you know, getting into the Linux kernel. And it was a similar journey for me actually on quantum computing, that there was this wealth of new material that was available. So I started kind of really trying to understand, okay, what on earth is quantum? How can we use this? And I discovered that actually there's an enormous crossover between quantum computing and kind of theoretical computer science. And that's really what got me hooked. And then I later had an opportunity to do a small scale project for the company that I was working in, looking at applications of quantum computing for the defense sector. And the rest, I suppose, is history.
It does seem like almost a leap in faith. I mean, looking at your, I guess what you just said, your a snapshot of your sort of career, your two careers, I guess, as a sort of computer scientist, cybersecurity, and then into quantum. You know, when we talk about quantum, and it's it is something to do with physics. So is there like a huge sort of kind of learning curve for someone who isn't a physicist?
I would say it's certainly counterintuitive, and that's irrespective of whether you're a physicist or not a physicist. Many of the concepts seem strange and alien. I had the benefit of coming from a degree which did a lot of linear algebra. And so I would argue that one of the strongest prerequisites that you do need for quantum algorithms in particular is to feel comfortable with linear algebra and that kind of manipulation. But as the great Roger Penrose said in the foreword of one of his books, and obviously an extremely well-known physicist and mathematician, I remember picking up one of his books when I was about 16 years old, just about to start A-level maths. So quite unfamiliar with a lot of the notation and the terminology that was being used. And his advice for kind of any sort of new or strange formula that you haven't seen before is to really kind of try and get an intuitive understanding from, you know, whatever source that is, that's maybe not reading the equation or understanding the terminology, but reading a description, looking at a diagram, trying to get some concept in your mind of what this thing is actually trying to describe, and then go back and learn the notation, and then go back and learn the formula. And that's something that's always served me well, and is a thing that I always do when I find something new and unfamiliar.
What are you currently looking at? What are you researching at the moment?
Yeah, so The team at Universal Quantum, the quantum algorithms and applications team, I would say we have two main focus areas, and the team is under Dr. Mark Weber. So our focus is not just on looking at quantum algorithms, which can implement real-world use cases, which is sort of primarily the area that I sit in, but it's also about understanding how we can build high-performance quantum error correction, and in particular, how we can get advantages for our scalable trapped ion hardware through clever design of error correction protocols. So, the work that I'm really focusing on at the moment is looking at a very specific use case for quantum computing, which is looking at how quantum algorithms can accelerate the simulation of chemical properties, specifically looking at quantum chemistry for the drug discovery process. And in particular, we've chosen to look at endometriosis. So this is a condition which affects around 10% of the population assigned female at birth. So that's around 190 to 200 million people worldwide. And in the UK, there's been some shocking statistics which show that the average time to diagnosis is between 7 and 10 years. And when we became aware of this, we realized that this is really symptomatic of systemic underfunding for women's health in general. So while we originally started out by thinking, okay, quantum algorithms, one of the great use cases for this is simulation of physical systems and also quantum chemistry, and with one of the main applications of that being in pharmaceuticals and drug discovery, we wanted to really align that with trying to bring equity to the forefront, not just about quantum computing for making more money, but also trying to address some of the societal inequalities that we unfortunately perceive in the world. And we were really thrilled to have a vehicle to do this through a program called the Open Quantum Institute.
Oh, fantastic. Now, with all this sort of research that's going on, and the work that you're doing, you must have a feeling of how close quantum computers are to being actually something that's really usable or commercially usable. And I'm sure one could argue that there are, some of them are things are being used now, but it's not quite the same as, you can go and get and specify and build a supercomputer, for instance. It seems a bit of a different beast. And what's your perspective on where on the evolution of quantum computers? And then I've got a quick follow-on on that, which is about how it's going to be, how they can support medical research going forward, given the work that you're doing now.
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I suppose it's almost sort of the billion-dollar question that everybody wants answered. Quantum computing has certainly come a very long way, even in the short time that I've been involved in the field. I think last year we saw a bit of a tonal shift, actually, from people talking about the number of physical qubits they have to actually really focusing on the progress that's been made in quantum error correction, and this kind of error of the logical qubit. And it's definitely worth saying that for the project that I was just talking about, thinking about quantum simulations for drug discovery, really to achieve this, what we need is a large-scale fault-tolerant quantum computer. So this is something which is many orders of magnitude larger than the hardware that we currently have at the moment. We're talking needing hundreds of thousands or millions of qubits, to be able to support the overhead of quantum error correction, at the scale that we would need to execute very large algorithms. And so I think what we're seeing broadly in the field is kind of this real push to try and understand, okay, how far away are we from the fault-tolerant error? What do we need to build and what do we need to improve on? Not just from the hardware side, but also thinking about what application developers need. So thinking more about middleware and software tools that will be needed for people who are domain experts, say, in computational chemistry to come in, and really be able to make use of these devices rather than it being quite an esoteric and specialized thing. for people like myself with a very specific skill set to be kind of the arbiters of what gets run on the quantum processor.
As someone who works in the field, I mean, do you have any sense of how long it's going to take? No, I mean, from a personal perspective, do you think you'll have a third career, or is this going to be, you know, before the quantum computing era hits us?
I'm really hopeful that I will be able to see it in my lifetime, certainly. I mean, I can only point to the rate of progress that we've had, you know, in the short time that I've been involved in the field. Seeing things which I'd read about as a theory paper, and then seeing results of it being published experimentally of, hey, we've actually realized this protocol or this algorithm. You know, to achieve that in less than a decade, I think is really something which is a great achievement. And I'm extremely pleased to see that we have the sustained long-term investment, especially from the UK government. I think over in the UK, we have a phenomenal National Quantum Technologies Programme. So Universal Quantum was spun out of the University of Sussex. And so it's incredible to see that sustained investment. And I think another thing which is a real strength that I'm really seeing the ecosystem pull together, and just further to your point about the use of quantum computing for medical research, one of the things that is abundantly clear in this field is that this is not a lone hero effort. It's not simply physicists or computer scientists or engineers who will be leading the charge into scalable, fault tolerant and useful quantum computing. Those are the sort of the three ingredients that we need: scalable on the hardware side, fault tolerant on the algorithm side. And for it to be useful, we need to bring in the end users who have, you know, decades of experience in optimizing their algorithms for classical hardware. And so one of the things that's quite encouraging for me is seeing kind of how that ecosystem is growing at pace alongside the developments in hardware and theory.
Thanks for tuning in. You can find the full article and podcast on www.computerweekly.com.